thanks to our sponsor, Raygun. Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full-stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your codebase, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experiences of your users. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 363. This week, AC and I talk to Microsoft's Cloud Adoption Framework wizard, I suppose, with Wayne Mayer, recorded live June the 4th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you definitely should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to sprint it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. Back to the show.
I realized July the 4th would be a more momentous occasion.
I'm about to say you're rolling us right into a barbecue holiday and everything, right? American
We wouldn't be recording on July the 4th, but how you been?
It's been a busy week with work stuff. You know, you love it when you start the day and you get thrown like for two or three complete curveballs. One was pretty damn comical. Did you see the video last night from the Australian Prime Minister?
Oh, no. Really?
Oh, dude, this is awesome. Yeah. It's quick. So I don't know what the whole thing was about, but the Australian Prime Minister was doing like a bit of a presser, and where the media was standing, they were apparently standing on some dude's yard. Some dude like walks out and you hear like Australian Prime Minister saying something, and you hear this guy go, "Hey, yo, can you guys get off my yard? I just seeded this thing." And so the Australian Prime Minister's like, "All right, we got to get off his yard. We got to get off his grass."
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty funny. You have to point me at that.
Yeah. So I did get a hell of a curveball thrown at me, and apparently it's being thrown at a lot of people today. So I don't know if you remember, but back in I don't know the facts behind this, so I don't want to let those get in the way of a good story. But what I understand is, so remember in episode 359, a couple shows ago, we talked about some hacker had gotten like Microsoft source code from GitHub, hacked a bunch of repos or something?
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is related to it, but I find the timing interesting. So Microsoft last night rolled out single sign-on is required on all GitHub repos, definitely for Microsoft employees, but also external contributors. And so now, which I'm an external contributor on a handful of private repos.
What does rolling out SSO on GitHub repos mean?
So what it means now is that if I'm normally logged in to GitHub,
yeah,
at least I'm still trying to learn this right now, but my experience is when I normally logged into my normal account, which is also tied to my Microsoft vendor account, it denies me access. It says you can sign on. I try and sign on. It goes, yeah, sorry, there's a problem. You can't connect to Azure AD single sign-on. If I open a private browser and I go to log in and sign in, then I can get into those same repos. But then my afternoon now is going to be set up to all these repos that I've cloned locally that I'm contributing to. Like I can't connect to any of them locally. And so I've got to go through updating all SSH keys or figuring out what's around that. But it's a complete curveball. And I was trying to figure it out. I'm like, okay, now I got it. I'm okay. And now I'm starting to see other people starting to wake up being like, holy crap, what the heck is going on here? It's like, it looks like there's an outage, but it's not. And it's a security implementation / feature that...
They rolled out SSH keys on all their repos or I'm not sure what you mean by SSO, but anyway.
Yeah, so single sign-on. So you can't... It was either part of the GitHub Satellite Conference or announced a build, but they were rolling out to where you could use your Azure AD account to sign into GitHub.
Oh, I see. Got it.
I don't know if this is part of it. just yet, but it definitely was like, I'm seeing a lot of people waking up being like, what the hell's going on? Something's broken. It's like, it's not broken. Something literally was turned on June the 3rd.
Some extra measures, huh?
Yeah. So it's changed my productivity plans for the day.
Nice.
How about you, man?
My world's been a lot simpler. I've told you about doing this crazy stuff outside, and I feel like I've had this cathartic moment in my life where normally, you know, up to this point, everything's been involved around either tech or some sort of tech like programming or what have you, or, you know, from time to time, jumping out of planes or going skiing or whatever. But I think I've nailed the art of irrigation, and it's sort of a bit like Lego, I've decided, and I like it.
It's quite a statement, CJ.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit like Lego, except it's sort of on a grander scale in terms of size, and it involves, you know, all the things you'd expect, chopping stuff, gluing stuff, tech, you know, hooking it up to smart sensors, all that sort of stuff, soil sensors and rainfall sensors and stuff. It's got something for everybody. So if you want a side project, I know you do because you're a Floridian and already have this stuff already. But if anybody's interested in a side project that involves tech and building something, irrigation's the way to go.
I was impressed with your manifold. I thought that you did a good job. And I know you said the glue was a little messy, but it doesn't primer was a little messy, but it doesn't matter, man. It's going to go in the dirt anyway. Nobody's going to see it.
Yeah, it's in the ground now. But I don't know. It's kind of like one of those, it's one of those big kid projects that you get to do. It was quite satisfying.
It is. Okay, so I think we ought to just make sure that our listeners who may be just tuning into this, because, I mean, we have a special guest today. We have a special topic we're talking about today.
Correct.
So they may not have listened to the last few shows. You're talking about, you live in Washington, you're doing irrigation, you're growing grass. Can you maybe, like, let's make sure people understand that we're talking about grass that is in the ground, like a lawn, use a lawnmower for, and not like, you know...
The wacky backy.
This isn't hydroponics. Right?
No, it's not. It's not hydroponics. It's not. That would be indoors. This is outdoors. Yeah.
Okay.
So I assume some of the same concepts apply. I'm not sure. I don't know. But it seems like an awfully ambitious project for because Washington, you just walk down the road and walk into a store for that sort of stuff. You don't have to do it yourself.
When I was doing all the plumbing for my aquarium, some of the best parts I find is actually going to the marijuana like stores that have the hydroponic stuff. Not going to the stores, but like the online things, like going, what are you looking for? I'm like, that subreddit talks about how to grow your own pot. I'm like, they have some really good techniques on how to get the plumbing in a really tight spot.
For
like,
a fish tank?
Yeah, it's like, that's really good. And of course, it's dumbed down because the people that are doing it, it didn't need to get too technical.
Hey, I mean, it's like NASA inventing stuff for use in space, right? The weed industry is inventing stuff for the aquarium business or for the aquarium enthusiasts as well, perhaps.
Yeah. So it's not that nice. But for those of you who are tuning in today, this is not that kind of a cloud show.
That's right. That's right. Indeed. In fact, we have a very special guest this week, which we will lead into in just a moment. Sorry to leave you hanging.
This episode is sponsored by AvPoint. If you like The Cloud Show, you will love the Shift Happens podcast with Microsoft MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation projects. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably arise when ambitious people try to impact their workplace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to www.avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag Shift Happens. That's one word, hashtag Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. And now, back to the show.
All right, with us today, we have Wayne Mayer. Wayne is the cloud adoption lead for Microsoft, who first joined Microsoft back in 1999, back in South Africa. I'm sure at some point we're going to have to exchange either sheep or rugby jokes because I'm from New Zealand, you're from South Africa. We have got some common bonds here, Wayne. Yeah. But since then, he's done a number of tours of duty and worked across South Africa, West, East, Central Africa, Saudi Arabia, the UK, the US, and most recently moved to the mothership in Redmond to work at Microsoft's headquarters in Bellevue. Worked in a number of different capacities and different teams, ranging from services and product marketing and customer success, but is now in product marketing and at the moment is completely focused on helping customers with their transformation to the cloud and what it means for business and the technology teams that support them. He likes to rock climb, ride bikes, both motorized and pedaled, and works on a van, got to talk about that, an 88 Chevy G20. Wayne, welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show.
Well, thank you for having me. This is it's awesome to be here. It's a good break from the regular day, which is fun.
Yeah, these days certainly are a little bit weird. I don't know if you normally work from home or not, but it sounds like you're in some of the Microsoft buildings in downtown Bellevue normally.
Yeah, so I have an office in Lincoln Square. I've been on campus in multiple of the buildings, some of them now flattened and no longer there with the big renovation project that's going on, which is phenomenal to see. But yeah, and then as I say, I've worked across multiple different offices globally, and a lot of my time has been, at least for the last 6 or 7 years, has been spent just traveling around, kind of being in subsidiaries and in different locations. So it's a good gig, you know. I would put myself as pretty fortunate working for Microsoft. It's been good. It has been a long time, so
yeah, 99. That's quite a ways back.
Yes, I do remember that very first day, and very first day on a plane was heading to at that stage I think it was called MTB, Microsoft Technical Briefing, in San Diego. So had no Amex, had no way to pay for anything when I got there, and it was a special experience. But
baptism by fire, gotcha.
Yeah.
Before we move into the real meat and potatoes of the interview, I just want to clear something up. How does it feel to constantly lose to New Zealand in the rugby? I mean, is this something that weighs on you heavily?
You know,
have you been away from it for long enough that you no longer worry about it?
It's broad shoulders. You deal with it. But I do kind of take the fact that the last World Cup was a good testament of where we stand. And so I think we'll kind of leave it at that point right now.
It's fair enough.
You're as good as your last World Cup, right?
And so the burn. Touche. Well, I just had to clear that up. It's not often that we get to have this sort of banter with Aussies or South Africans, and that special bond that we have between our countries. And so I just thought I'd throw that out there just to kick things off. But I jest, of course.
And on the spirit of rugby, 2 seconds, I do enjoy watching Americans play rugby. I think it's a phenomenal, given another 20 years, I think it's going to be in a really good spot. I mean, just you see the small kind of leagues popping up around, especially in kind of Washington.
Yeah,
it's cool to see. So there's no reason why the US shouldn't be a way bigger force in rugby. There's some pretty big lads who run around here.
Yeah, it's certainly big on the East Coast. And, now Seattle has a professional, I guess, semi-pro or pro rugby team, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's good to see.
Great game for those who are listening. Go check it out on some South Africa versus New Zealand highlights from the last Rugby World Cup, as much as I'm cringing saying that, but anyway.
Or 1995, that would be good as well.
Oh, you have to go that far back. Gotcha. All right. anyway.
I'm going to put myself on mute, go get another coffee and watch this. This is awesome.
So really to get back to the theme of the show, what does it really mean to be a cloud adoption lead? What are you working on for Microsoft with customers, and what does this really mean? Be trying to achieve?
So, I mean, essentially, I'm a product manager, but I kind of try to put the frame around like helping customers get enabled and ready to adopt. I think over the last couple of years, we've got, we've done a lot of work in building out this adoption framework. And essentially, the adoption framework is really our way of being able to pull together best practices and patterns that we've seen. Cloud adoption is hard, right? And I'm going to just be straight up. Like, this is not a simple thing that we just turn on and say, oh, take this asset, throw it up there. And especially when you're talking to large organizations, there are a lot of complexities as part of that. And it's more than just the data center in the sky. It's really about that transformation that customers are going to go through. Because as you start to think about cloud is really a model. It's not just a place of putting stuff. And when you start to internalize what the model looks like, that kind of starts to define things around organizational structure, the new capabilities that you need to build out. We tend to go to the DevOps practice, like how do I bring my developers and my business close together? I try and drive for agile development. And then we also want customers to be able to respond rapidly and on various, you know, changing conditions. And so whatever those macroeconomic factors that are coming in, how do customers respond and respond to these environments and these things? So, you know, as you kind of think about cloud adoption, it's really about helping customers establish some really intentional practices within their business and then being able to build and continue to evolve that. For many of us, you know, we've been in this, in the industry for a long period of time. And, you know, over the last, I can say 25 years or so of doing a lot of these customer engagements, you've got a lot of technical debt. You've gone through eras of servers to Vert to now, hey, we're looking at, you know, cloud or at least, you know, colo and hosted environments. What is the evolution is then, hey, we went and put things into VMs in cloud. Now we start to think, got to start thinking about how do we become more cloud native and maybe utilize some of these new capabilities and how do we innovate more effectively around some of these things. So I think trying to help build some of that muscle in organizations is really key. We've been focused a lot on, you know, helping customers both, not just on the technology piece. And I feel like we're generally pretty good on the widgets. Right? We can talk widgets and resources and, you know, technical pieces day in and day out. A lot of this comes down to, hey, where do we think about these people and process? And I've spoken to some pretty large, worked with pretty large customers. I've probably done, you know, cloud adoption sessions over 300 times. I've got 50 plus different engagements going on where it always comes down to, hey, how do I align my resources and how do I align my people? And when you start talking about establishing governance teams and strategy teams and automation teams, like, and the capabilities in those businesses, you want to be intentional about building that muscle. It's kind of funny. I think I can't even remember the time frame. It's been probably 10 plus years ago, 12 plus years ago, when we came out with PowerShell and we were saying like, hey, in Windows, you got to start thinking about developing and coding and writing script. And it is like, I can just point and click. You know, that's actually worked so well. And if you look at the evolution of where we're at now, everything we do is now through kind of script and code. And there's skills that we need to build in. And so that's been fascinating to watch traditional, you know, like IT folk becoming more kind of code centric and obviously developers then becoming more IT centric. And so that's this amalgamation of resources that we're seeing. And I think as soon as customers get this, and it's encouraging because I'm seeing a lot of customers doing this, they really start to see the benefits of cloud kind of being present within their environment.
I'm curious, like, of the people that are going through this, that are moving. I mean, I'm assuming you're talking about the more medium size, the larger size businesses, not so much the small ones. And I'm curious if you see people, companies that are more open and have a better visibility into kind of where they want to get to, or more it's, I'm just kind of sticking my toes into this, like I'm trying to get this one thing done. And then once they get in, it's kind of like peeking through beyond the door and like, okay, now we're kind of in. You're looking around like, wow, there's a whole bunch of stuff that we can actually do to take advantage of this. I mean, is it like I don't want to say it's like a gateway drug, but is it kind of like, you know, once you kind of get in, they more companies kind of see or learning more about it? Or do they go in like a lot more companies going in eyes wide open? Like, we know what we're trying to achieve here. It's just, we just need some help on how to guide through this.
It's actually all over the map, which is fascinating to watch because you got some customers that are pretty mature. They've done a lot of things, but they've been in for a long time, right? And so, and they went in because either they had a specific motivation and business need. And we look at this, even part of the adoption framework, we look at the various motivations and you'll have things like these short-term motivations or immediate kind of, what is the immediate need that I have? Either I've got to get out of a data center because contracts are for renewal, or I have a specific capacity need that I have to address because, you know, I don't want to go and acquire new hardware and I've just got to be able to fulfill this particular business need. To other customers that are, so that might be kind of like the immediate need to get in, and they've been running there for a while. But then you've got other customers who are far more intentional. We've said, hey, we are looking to transform. We are making a big statement of we're going to be building new for the future. Here's what we're focusing on. And so then they go into it with a bit more kind of, I guess, almost like a far more schematic approach to say, I'm going to do phase one, phase two, phase three. And so it's fascinating to watch customers ebb and flow across these environments. The other thing around adoption is that it's not linear, right? And that's kind of one of my learnings as I've been doing this is, you know, customers, it'll be very kind of circular. So you'll go and do something, you'll have to come back and adjust the plan. And then you kind of revise the team, we drive the skills, look at people, making sure that they have the right skills. And then we go into the next version. And so having this notion of MVP and evolution, I think has become something that is really part of the language and the narrative that we give all the time, is to say, hey, you've really got to, don't strive for perfection, right? That's going to slow you down. You want to be able to have that MVP. And that term MVP does cause a little bit of kind of sweat in some folk, right? You take a security person and you say, hey, what is the MVP for you versus the MVP for a business guy? They're very different. Like, the security guy's wired to say no. He's just going to say, like, this doesn't go there until it meets more of my requirements. Well, that's your MVP. And let's make sure that we have that established. So I think this notion of building out the MVP, getting to a point that just is the minimal viable product, and then we can continue to evolve on that, I think is that notion of cloud that we try to kind of push into customers, say, hey, we can do these things in these 6-week sprints. It doesn't have to be this 3-year laborious project that you're planning for. You want to get things going. And as you do this, you're learning and you're building muscle. And so we find that customers go in, they'll take an initial project, take your first 10 applications and say, hey, these are the things that I'm going to go and migrate, or I'm going to innovate on. You build the backlog, you figure out, am I going to refactor this? Am I going to kind of just lift and shift as is because of all the dependencies of that application? And then if I'm going to be refactoring, how am I going to refactor it? Then you build the muscle, you kind of learn, you build a pattern out of that. That pattern gets coded, and you ultimately want to then build that into a DevOps pipe. So the next time you get to that application of a similar pattern, well, it becomes an easier backlog of work to deliver on. All of this needs to make sure that as you're kind of working through this process, you've got the right landing zone in place. And we've got a lot of really good guidance that's established in the adoption framework, which shows about things like how do we build out the landing zone in terms of your hub and spoke model, your RBAC controls, thinking about subscription management, your network schemas, whether I'm building a network for PaaS only or network for kind of, as I say, for VMs that are going to be building, that are bringing in. So there's a lot of considerations, and we've documented all of those best practices in the adoption framework, which, you know, I've heard from customers, they said, hey, this has really helped us accelerate. And we've taken one customer most recently that I was working with, and within 21 days, we had them from ideating to kind of building out their environment, because you've managed to kind of give them that flow. The cool thing about all of this is that we've started to build a lot of this knowledge and this learning into DevOps projects that you can actually go and take and apply into your own Azure DevOps organizations. And that for me is kind of like one of the most exciting things, because we can now go from theory, where we help you define your strategy, build your plan, identify how you're going to drive the outcomes and what the impact is. And then you can document that plan and you say, hey, am I going to bring that plan together? Let's put it through an ADO project. And boom, you've got all the steps that are there, which is super, super cool. And so I think, you know, building that muscle for customers is important.
You see Microsoft has spent a lot more time on in the last couple of years about making all the configuration management stuff that we can do inside of Azure, inside of cloud, that everything can be defined using these ARM templates. And it's so much easier now to not only go through and roll these things out, but to make changes, and you don't feel as concerned or as scared about making the changes, because it's much easier to have visibility into what's changing and how this environment is different from this environment. You may have one play tenant that you're kind of testing out ideas and like experimenting with, and you got your production tenant over here, but it's nice to be able to see, you know, what's the difference between the two, and tools like to make that a lot easier, like a Terraform kind of stuff, or it makes it so much easier to see that. It's a funner world. It's less of a concern of trying to make a change to see those things.
The thing that's been interesting for me, the thing that's been really interesting for me to watch the evolution with customers is that security is always going to be top of mind. Customers are always going to be concerned about security, but security has become less of the lead of the lead conversation, and it's more of the, hey, help us govern this environment correctly. And as we think about governance, our governance really spans things from, yes, security identity, absolutely essential. We've got to have the baselines in place, and we've got to have that correct. But customers are really starting to have their conversation around, all right, tell me, how do I put the right cost controls in place? Do I have the right guardrails on the cost side? And how do I think about optimization? How do I think about this from being consistent on my deployments? And so I'm going to just assume that security and identity are taken care of, but I now have got to start putting in these different measures in place to drive the controls. And that's been a fascinating conversation to have with customers as they go through it. And I think most of the customers I speak to are all really open to kind of understanding how do we put governance in place and having the right MVP for governance. In fact, I was up at 6 this morning talking to a customer around things like policy and Azure Blueprints and the implementation. And that's like Azure Blueprints for me, super cool piece of technology. I just absolutely love it. You know, bringing together things like, you know, policies and RBAC and building out resource groups and applying ARM templates into them. So think about, you talk about Terraform, great. Like we do a lot of stuff at Terraform. And then obviously kind of the Microsoft implementation, if you're looking at just building out a stamp and a consistent environment, or you can do that through Blueprints. And things like Blueprints as code, you can pipe through Terraform as well. So there's a really cool kind of story that's coming together there. And customers love it when they see that, you can, how easy it is to pull the stuff together. Part of that is we're sharing out things like various samples. So we've created things like CIS samples or NIST samples or PCI and ISO samples. So a lot of that hard kind of, some of the hard projects of, hey, how do I make this environment CIS compliant? Well, we've tried to take all that heavy lifting out of that and provide the sample and the platform that if you go into Azure Policy today and do a search on kind of a CIS initiative or a NIST initiative, it's there. And then we've incorporated that into kind of various Blueprint samples as well. So I can drop you guys some links on some of those things because it is really, really cool.
Coming back to one thing you said that I thought was really interesting is what you said about the no department, right? The security team, right? And how that's no longer really being quite as many no's anymore. That seems to have been one of the largest changes from the early days of the cloud until now is, you know, previously a few years ago, perhaps, or even 5 or 8 years ago, it was always the security guys saying no, right? It was always, that was the sort of the first hurdle you'd come across. And now you're saying that you see more of them saying yes. What's the new no? Where do you think the sticky points are in hesitation for cloud adoption these days? Because it's obviously changed somewhat.
And I think it's not necessarily that they always say yes. It's now more of a maybe, which I think is good progress because you've actually got...
But it's not a no.
But it's not a no, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, if you put these things, if we have the right guardrails established and the right controls in place... And so where I see, you know, these organizations that have built out, you know, their governance teams and their governance capability. And governance capabilities typically include people from infrastructure, enterprise architecture, finance, security, you know, networking. Like, so you've now got these networks of people creating this, doing decisions as opposed to these kind of silos of individuals, which in the old world means like, hey, if I want to make a decision, I've got to go to security. They take a couple of, you know, a week or their next council meeting is in like 2 months' time. So I'm going to have to wait 2 months for that approval to come through. And then I've got to go to the next person. Whereas if you now establish some of these rules up front as part of a governance council and a governance team, where you've got representation from business, from IT, from security, you can net these things out. And that's where the principle of building up this MVP is really important because you can establish that core set of rules. Everybody agrees to those rules. We can then get them deployed and implemented in a relatively, I'm not going to say relatively easy way, but you can apply them out through policies and you apply them out through blueprints and so on. And now you've got an environment that says, hey, my rule is established and my rule's in place. Now you, when that asset lands in there, it's already secured by, you know, according to the controls that have been put forward by the security team. The next question that starts to come up for folks is really that I'm starting to see is, hey, help me understand the business case. Help me understand the outcomes and the impact that I'm going to be taking. So do I make the decision to build cloud native? And I'm seeing there's a lot of this where customers are coming to us saying, we're only going to be PaaS first. That's all we're going to ever do. And I think I tend to find that those decisions of being very kind of rigid on PaaS first versus, hey, I'm prepared to look at the workload and the outcome that I want to achieve, kind of blocking them as well. We want to make sure that we enable the technology to support the business outcome that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I think getting back to that core, that crux is really important. And so, you know, I see more organizations looking more holistically, taking these environments, and hey, there's needs for us to be able to do, you know, lift and shift. And that is really important. But we have to do it with lift, shift, and then optimize. I find a lot of organizations do that. Hey, throw it up there, walk away, and then, you know, 6 months later, come back and say, hold on, what's going on with my costs? Why are, you know, how do I now address them? So, well, we want to make sure that we have that process in place. And so there's a lot of really cool stuff that has been built as well. We talk about it under kind of a well-architected structure where we start to do things like app analysis and architecture design reviews within this, where you can look at cost, scalability, resiliency. And we've got, if you go to the links, the aka.ms/adopt, go to getting started, there's an architecture review that you can do on an application where you can start to ask a series of questions. And what's really cool is it tells you kind of like, hey, where do we think you have gaps in that environment? So I see that it is starting to evolve, and more customers are really keen on thinking about the possibilities and the outcomes. I mean, I've sat with a number of customers where we go through conversations and there's a lot more ideating going on where they think about, hey, if I had this piece of data, what do you think I could do with it? Which is pretty exciting to see. That's a cool place because they're thinking about innovation and they're thinking about those next steps. And I think the adoption framework is helping them lead towards that conversation.
So do you think, is this something for customers that are, or organizations that are thinking about moving to the cloud mostly, or is it also for customers that have made their first steps, have got their feet in the cloud a little bit, making mistakes and need some assistance? Where do you think it falls on that spectrum? Is there a bit of both, or is it more tailored to one or the other?
Yeah, it's absolutely both. I think I can honestly say that the ones that are just us that are just starting their journey, that's a little easier because you just don't have that technical debt that you have to deal with what's there. Ones that customers that are there and are then kind of coming back and saying, hey, tell me, how do I apply RBAC? You know, I've been building all these custom roles, or I've been just applying everybody contributor access at the user level. Okay, this is something that takes a little bit more kind of decoupling because you stop breaking, you've built process around some of these things. Mm. Or you've got customers today we've got these environments running and we're working on old, and I hate to use the word legacy, but, you know, older guidance that we've given back in the day, and they haven't quite evolved these environments into moving from classic Azure to ARM. Mm. So how do we get some of those customers to kind of move? And there is always this evolution that you got to take. And so you've taken some of these customers that started early up, and now you've got to try to help them kind of migrate and at least modernize what they have there as well. Mm. And then I think the industry piece is also fascinating as well, because you start to see there's different industries that are at different inflection points. And so some industries are still sitting in the, hey, for us to be innovative, we're just moving to cloud and we're putting our assets up in cloud as VMs. And then you've got some industries that are just well ahead doing some really interesting cool stuff around data manipulation. And so you have to be able to blend with all of those. But to your point, like the very early, the customers that are just starting their journey, here's where we take them through that building an adoption plan, being intentional about those projects, putting some structure in place around that landing zone and governance, making sure that you have the right guardrails. Then what is the management aspect of this? You're going to think about the views that you want to get, the operational fitness reviews that you want to apply. And then, hey, here's some patterns that we have today of what typical applications look like when they go to cloud. That's kind of the length of, you know, what we'd cover. We typically do this through, you know, we've got a bunch of great partners that are doing this work day in and day out, and they do a phenomenal job in the space. We've got a bunch of, you know, our internal, our CSAs, our cloud solution architects are phenomenal. Like the level of depth that they go into with customers is really, really good. And I think it's a lot of that learning. And then what I also find with the adoption framework is that we're starting to bring together multiple aspects of Microsoft. Microsoft's a pretty complex organism, right? And so there's always something going on in terms of different pockets. So, hey, how do I bring in that skills readiness into that conversation? Or if you are an infra person and you're a data person and you're an app dev person, you will have a role to play within this customer's lifecycle. And so bringing these different skill sets together, I'm finding it's helping coalesce some of that conversation.
Really funny to hear you refer to a part of Azure as legacy. It's kind of like, well, we've come such a long way that you hear about, you know, classic Azure, like, oh yeah, that was right. We did have this thing before ARM. So it was a long time ago.
I've got
two questions for you. So one of them is, as somebody who, like, let's say somebody wanted to get involved in this, like they wanted to take it, they wanted to go explore yourself. You do this for Microsoft or for customers on behalf of Microsoft. How much of this is something that an organization where would somebody say that I need to engage Microsoft to give me a hand for somebody like you to help me adopt, be able to leverage the cloud really well for my organization? But then where would you put that bar of maybe someone that says, you know what, let me just go is the cloud adoption framework something that I could just go grab and I could start kind of picking through it and say, like, you know, let's see what this, how this applies to me. Like, how much of it is kind of self-driven and how much of it can be like self-driven and how much of it is you really are going to be beneficial if you have somebody helping you along with this?
Yeah, it's being built with self-service in mind, right? And so to be able to self-serve many of these things. And I think the link that I've given on the adopt site takes you to kind of the all up landing page, which will then link you on to the 1400 pages of content. And the engineering group have done a great job of documenting all of this. And it's the 1400 pages is not a measure of success, but it just shows that, like, with the level of depth that we've gone into to try and build this stuff up, right? And there's so many patterns and so many best practices and guidance. And I've had customers saying, yeah, I'm about 50% of the way through and this has been really helpful. And I've had other customers say, like, you know, this is my guide to help me adopt. So I think you can self-serve. Microsoft and its partners and our services, you know, do a great job. They're aligned to kind of utilizing this as well. So I think you could self-serve mostly for the larger organizations and the customers that we directly engage with. They're going to be probably talking to their account execs and their account technology specialists and Azure specialists and say, hey, I'm in this process of adoption. How do I move? Or it's going to be a push from us to say, we've got something that we can kind of take you through. We've got other, you know, a range of partners that we've spent like across the US today have got this practices in place as well, where you can reach out to your local partner and say, hey, I want to get going. But I think mostly for organizations today, jumping in and just being able to go through this, some really simple self-assessment environments. So as I mentioned, the one around the architecture review, there's another one around the cloud journey tracker, which is just to say, hey, where am I at on this journey? And that'll kind of position the right content for you to go and take a review on. We've got a really cool governance benchmark assessment, which I actually use with customers all the time. And this governance benchmark will help evaluate what are your business priorities and where are the gaps that you have today in terms of your deployments. So now you can start to think about where do you put measures in place for governance and controls. And then ultimately it goes into, hey, you use Azure Policy, you Azure Blueprints and so on. But so there's a couple of those self-serving tools to help get you going and to move forward. So I think, and then obviously the partner and services kind of technical account managers are always there to support as well.
So another question I had was, I mean, a lot of this, being new to this, maybe misunderstanding something. I see it's called on the adopt page that you mentioned, which we'll have these links in our show notes for all listeners to be able to get access to this stuff. It says Microsoft Cloud Adoption Framework for Azure. So for me, my background is primarily in the Microsoft 365 space or Office 365. So how much of this do you also see applies to people's adoption, or does it apply to people's adoption at all with Microsoft 365 as well?
It's a great question. It's one that we consistently kind of, you know, face every time we talk to customers. And the most common kind of connection points are things like, hey, as you're talking through governance and identity baseline, identity and, you know, M365 and, you know, O365, like that's where you see kind of common connections. Now, you can take a lot of the principles that we've applied there. The content that has been built is heavily focused around Azure implementation, but there are definitely connection points around things like identity, data governance. How should you be thinking about data governance? Definitely areas and patterns that we've built on building out things like mobile solutions. So I think whilst it is focused on Azure today, I think that there are connection points. I do think that the deployment and the kind of activation of some of the other cloud services with them being SaaS is slightly different. I mean, Azure is a collection of things. And somebody gave the analogy the other day. It's like kind of, you can either go and buy a finished good product or you can buy kind of all of the parts and if you're making a soup, right? And so, and that soup could be anything. It could be minestrone, it could be tomato, whatever you want to do. But it's the parts that you're pulling together. And so whilst there are some, you know, finished good solutions that you find in the marketplace and services, I think that there are nuances to kind of establishing that Azure environment and to make sure that you have that operating environment. And I think that's where the adoption framework sits most fervently, prominently. But I think there are different connection points across other areas. Does that translate?
Yeah, it definitely does. From my experience, I see people before, a lot of organizations are going to 365 first. And then that's kind of, it almost turns into being a bit of their gateway into Azure. I mean, I see a lot of the other side as well, but, you know, let's get my email off-prem. Let me get it up to the cloud. And that's like the first move that they're not making. And they start to realize other things that they can do with like collaboration in their organization. And then we need to start building in-house applications or stuff that's going to drive their business. And they naturally are going to look to, well, we're doing this stuff in 365 now. We want to get access to that data. Naturally makes sense to have these applications live beside those, maybe not exactly beside them, but effectively beside them inside Azure, because they're going to, it's going to be more easily leverage and access the data that we have in 365. And then that's kind of like, oh, well, look at all this other stuff that we can do. It's kind of, I mean, you're walking through a maze, and I don't want that to sound like a bad connotation, but you're walking through a maze and you kind of come around that one corner once you build that one app, and it's like, wow, look at all this other stuff over here. And we could use this, and we could use this, and all these different ideas that we have. And it's, I mean, as somebody who's been through it for my own business, I mean, you look at it and you keep kind of see all these tools, like I could use all of these things for all this different stuff. And it's like, wait, hold on, scope this. Let's make sure you don't bite too much stuff off. Let's not, I mean, you can design until the cows come home, but it's, let's start seeing value coming back and having a plan for making sure that we're not biting off too much and growing in a way that we're going to be able to best leverage it at the best expense, getting the best return we can as quick as we can, but also not doing things that are going to paint us into a corner or make some decisions that are going to make other things challenging in the future.
Yeah, you spot on. I have tons of conversations with customers around this stuff day in and day out, and customers don't view Microsoft in the individual cloud. They view, hey, it's Microsoft, right? And so we've got to be able to show up and kind of be able to help connect those dots. And I think I found that it is a lot of real estate and a lot of ground to cover when you think about everything from 365, Dynamics, Azure, kind of Surface. It's a pretty large footprint. And so, but I do find that many of these conversations that we kick off within, at least in the Azure space, do start talking a little bit, kind of connecting into these different areas about how do I kind of manage the clients and the users that are coming in, and do I have that control around identity of those individuals? And hey, let's think about this from a conditional access perspective, that when you want to log in and you're coming in from a device that is not domain joined, or you're coming in from a device that I don't know about, all right, how do we connect those dots? And so now you start having some of those conversations. Or, hey, I'm creating all this data that's from, you know, that's sitting in a SharePoint repository or environment. What is the classification, and how do I do data governance on that information? And how do I try and make that connection as part of my broader governance story? So it does tend to be a catalyst to kind of drive in. But I think your point, the point that you raise around being careful not to bite off too much stuff, like you eat the elephant one bite at a time. It's that kind of approach that we have to say, hey, here's some things that we focus on, and we're going to do this pretty well. And then make those connections as we move out. You will also see the name of it, you know, Cloud Adoption Framework. That is now, I think there was an intent. It's an intentional naming to make sure that it kind of, it's a common understanding across all clouds. And so when customers say, hey, we've, you know, how do we think about this? Well, there is this common theme that has gone across all the various cloud vendors to say, hey, we've got this Cloud Adoption Framework that we talk through.
Out of interest, do you see this ending anytime soon? Like, you're out talking to customers every day. You've been involved with this for many years. You're all in on the cloud, so to speak, to borrow a phrase. And you know, is there any end in cloud adoption in sight? So, I mean, I realize there's just decades of legacy infrastructure and things that people are hosting, but people are still adding on-prem stuff today, still, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm not that involved in it. I just don't see it day-to-day enough to really get a feeling for, like, where are we on this journey, and is there any end in sight? Like, will there be a day where we come where we go, okay, I'm done with helping people with adoption. They're all adopted.
Are you asking when we start the galactic adoption framework?
Yeah, maybe. The cloud? There'll be another cloud one beyond that. Yeah, exactly.
Part of it is I have this reaction to the word adoption, because the word adoption feels finite. And I don't see this as being a finite thing. There is, you know, I may adopt and have an environment today that is well established and ready for me to kind of move my data assets up there. Well, the next thing is I need to now adopt an analytics platform. Mm. All right. And so what does that look like? Or, hey, I'm a research organization. How do I now adopt the next thing around quantum? Because I want to do better, you know, kind of analysis of tons and tons of data. Like, so I don't see that there will be an end point on this. I think there will be a point where we will continue to get better at doing things. And there's always this market, the market, there's, you know, there's going to be the market leaders, and then there's going to be the trail, the long tail that you have. And so everybody's going to, people will continue to have to adopt. And I think those, the trailblazers are helping build out those lessons that the long tail are going to learn from, and that their adoption will become easier and easier. And I think that's just the nature of the way that this will go. And we'll continue to add to it. I can't see a time where we say, hey, we're all adopted and kind of, you know, and off we go. There's always going to be something new that's coming through. And that's the exciting part of the world that we live in, you know. It's just, it is this ongoing learning that we tend to go through. I mean, my day, every single day, I can, like, there is something new that I'm learning as we go through this.
It's almost like maybe one day you'll rename it from an adoption framework to sort of an evolution framework, right? It's an ongoing sort of evolutionary, and a lot of it seems to be not so much about the tech, but more about the organizational change, right? It seems to be a common theme that I heard you talk about. Like, the tech is there, right? It's just going to be, you move bits and bytes and what have you. But really the difficult stuff that organizations need help with is the internal change themselves.
There is a really good graphic that was put together, and I forget the name of the organization, but it's called kind of mindset shifts, you know, for organization transformation. And they talk about these different kind of levels of what does traditional silos look like to networks of people, or how do we go from moving a planning or an organization who's always planning to an organization that's experimenting. And so there is this internal, this cultural change that you go through. And I think it's probably one of the hardest things that organizations look at is say, culturally, to change has to stem from, well, if it stems from the top, it tends to be easier. You have to really embody what cloud can actually offer.
It's funny you say that, because one of the things that I find, one of the things that I love, I guess, about this business now, I mean, I didn't get into this for the reasons I'm in it now. I mean, I love the learning side of it, but the thing that really gets me now is, you know, you watch a Build conference, or you watch an Ignite conference, or any of these other conferences, and it's not just, this isn't just scoped just to Microsoft, but all of like what the public clouds do, and you see like a new service or a new feature that's announced and say, hey, look, we can now do this, or we can now do this. And it's so many times now that you know, the maturity of you in the business world, you realize that it's like, this isn't somebody at Microsoft coming up with this new feature, just saying, hey, wouldn't this be cool? But there's a business out there that had some sort of a need and had some sort of a demand for it. And you look at a service like this, or like, it can be something as small as like, here's a new kind of a VM that we have. And it's like, okay, that's interesting. And then they share the VM. And CJ and I will get on a show, and I'm like, I would love to know the kind of organization that needs this. I mean, what, this isn't somebody being critical of it. It's like, who in the world would need that service or that feature? It's more like, well, now I want to know who needs that, because I don't see the use case for that. And now I'm really curious, like, who does need that? That's one of the coolest things about this, is just seeing that there's, I feel like my imagination is almost limited to a point you hear a feature come out and it's like, I never would have thought about that, but that's freaking brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Like, when you think about the complexity of the role that the engineers have and how they go in to build these things, and there's a lot of times you'll say, why do you do it that way? And you kind of like question things, and I'll take it. Even in my life of kind of working on my van, I'm like, damn, why did the engineer kind of put the strut in this particular space? Like, maybe it was just because that was just easiest, but it makes a real nightmare to kind of work on afterwards. But, you know, you think about the complexity, you think about the complexity of what these engineers have to kind of build, put in place to build, satisfying the needs of millions of customers across different industries with different, you know, different interests. It is fascinating. I think the ideation process is really good to watch within customers as they go through this, to think about, hey, what can I do next, and where am I going to go with it?
That's got to be one of the most fun parts of the job, and just getting exposed to seeing what so many different organizations are doing. And it's like walking into a kitchen, a new kitchen and a new pantry every single time. Just like, what are we going to make today? Like, I've never seen something like this. I've never seen this ingredient, or I've never seen this tool. I've never thought how we're going to use this, and how can we best take advantages? How can we make this better? Or I learned this from this partner over here. We implemented it this way. And the organization says, yeah, so we've done that, but we need to have this special requirement. It's like, so maybe we could do it like this. And it's just, that's gotta be fun. That's gotta be energizing with the business. If you like to learn,
yeah,
it's gotta be fantastic. It's fun running. I always get, I guess, amused when I run across people in this business and they're like, God, I got something else I have to learn. I'm like, wrong business to be in now. Wrong
business to be in. And I would encourage listeners, like, if you just go and sign up for a free account on Azure and just poke around and take this and, you know, read through this. I mean, build up your own environments and kind of break them down and rebuild. It's like, there's so much that you kind of pick up as you go and just play around with the stuff. I think it's cool. And then the Microsoft Learn environment, as in kind of on off docs, that is really cool. Just that free learning and certification that you can kind of go through. And I'm a big advocate and big fan. We cover this on a daily basis.
I have one amendment to what you just said. I would, once you do sign up for your subscription and you do, you get your free credit for that 1 month, and you realize, oh, you want to go a little bit farther, and you add a credit card to it. There is a way that you can still put limits on your spend. I would encourage you to do that. Don't do what I did with my business and walk away with 3 days later, you've got a five-figure bill, and you go back to Microsoft like, hat in hand, like, that wasn't what I thought it was doing. And it's like, I didn't realize that spun off.
You should have gone through the Cloud Adoption Framework and, you know, read up on the governance piece, how to put cost governance in place.
I totally should have. I mean, and the other lesson is, don't start a job on Christmas Eve and then walk away and spend time with family on Christmas and come back the day after Christmas and realize, holy crap, that's still running.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are first steps? Where should people go to find out more about this? And if they're interested in reading some of the material and getting started, where would you send them?
So aka.ms/adopt. That is the single place that I use that particular link day in and day out, probably 20 times a day. I will go there and then I'll trawl into the documentation. And I think just familiarize yourself with the way that we approach it, from building out a strategy, a plan, getting ready with your landing zone, putting in your governance controls, how do we manage this? And then ultimately kind of the adoption patterns that we think you should be using. So start at the landing page. I think it's got everything that you need there.
Brilliant. Yeah, we'll certainly include that in our show notes for those of you who are listening and want a simple click.
Great.
You'd be able to take a look at that. Now, we have a very important part of the show that we like to call picks, and we've forewarned you about this, I believe. So we're looking forward to seeing what you've got for us. But before that, we will take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admin control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations in a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
All right, Wayne. We have had many interesting picks on the show. Probably the person that was most stumped by the picks, we probably should have given him a bit more warning about this, but was Scott Guthrie. And we got him on the spot, and he you could see this churning in his head of, am I supposed to stay on message here? Am I supposed to be the Microsoft guy, or am I supposed to be the Scott person? And it was just really interesting. But he came through. And so we've sort of carried on this tradition, but we no longer put people completely on the spot of surprising them by asking them for a pick. So it's something AC and I try to do each week. We don't always succeed. Listeners also have their picks, but we thought we'd ask our guests on the show for something interesting that they've found in their life over the last wee while. It could be anything, tech-related, non-tech-related, an article you've read, a book you've read, any sort of thing like that. But we're really interested in hearing what you might have for us this week.
Yeah, well, even giving me the notice, I'm always completely stumped because I'm kind of squirrel-like. Right? I'm always over doing something else. And so I can tell you now it's going to be non-tech. My life kind of revolves around doing everything from kind of my van kind of to doing stuff in the garden to working on a motorcycle to you name it. But so I've kind of taken to doing a bunch of cooking and bread making and stuff like that over this time. But I think the thing that stood out that my pick is really all about coffee. So I've kind of started, you know, you give it home and hey, every 10 minutes, you got to go now grab a cup of coffee. And so I'm trying to figure out like, I'm tired of drinking poor coffee. So I went out and I've started for like, this is for all for a kind of a, under $100 because I was tight. I didn't want to go and buy myself a really fancy kind of espresso machine because I think I want to spend money on other things. But so kind of did a quick, you know, a shorter electric coffee grinder for kind of like sub $30 that could shift in 2 days. With a Bialetti kind of Venus stovetop where, you know, espresso.
Ooh, classic.
And then drinking out and drinking through one of these like really cool Bodum Pavina double wall clear glass.
Nice.
It almost looks like a coffee's kind of suspended and hanging. So that was kind of my thing that I thought, okay, this is really
perfect.
Good that right now. Yeah.
So for under $100, you can become a coffee connoisseur, right?
It's that might be a stretch, but it's you can get yourself going.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. I love taking one of those stovetop. It's not really espresso, right? But it's similar. It's pretty close. So I like to take one of those camping when we go camping. So I get my caffeine fix first thing in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So AC, what do you have for us this week, my friend?
I'm going to go with the non-work pick this week, but I'm going to go a little on the technical side. So I got this a while ago for a birthday or Christmas present from my parents. And I figured the best time to start working on this would be a pandemic. And so I got the Lego Bugatti, the Chiron, which I think it's a huge set. It's a 1/8 scale Bugatti Chiron. Started working on it and opened it up. First of all, the presentation is phenomenal for this set. But they did something unique with this that I think is going to, at least CJ, it's going to make you go gaga. Wayne, you know, hearing your background with or working on your van, you may like this too. So Lego did a podcast, the Technic podcast, but it really isn't just a Technic podcast. It's all about building the Chiron. And so what they did is through a series of interviews, they interviewed the designers and the engineers at Chiron and they took those two things and they interviewed those guys. And then they went over to Lego and the engineers at Lego to try and figure out how are you guys going to build this? And how did you figure this out? And how did you do the engine? How did you figure these pieces out? They kind of went back and forth, and it ends up a lot of the Bugatti engineers and designers are Lego fan, and they were thrilled that Lego wanted to do this, and they wanted to figure out how is Lego going to solve this problem, because at one part in the entire podcast, one of the engineers at Bugatti is like, we went and got a bunch of Lego. We tried to implement this, and we could not figure out how to do this. And then when they did it, we heard they did it. We're like, we want to see this, and so we wanted to get the set, and we haven't built it yet. So we want to go through and figure out how they did it. And they interviewed the Lego guy and he goes, well, I cheated. I actually made two of them and I put these two things together. So that's not a real model of the car. That part is a real model. I'm like, oh, you can't do it.
It's classic.
If you're a car guy, you'll love it. If you're a Lego guy or gal, you'll love it. And it's
nice.
It's fun to listen to while you're actually building the car. I'm actually listening to the entire podcast season for a second time while I'm building the car.
That sounds pretty cool. I will definitely go and tune into that for sure.
Yeah. It's fun. How about you? What you got?
I've got something vaguely tech related. Well, it is tech related, but it's also pretty funny. So I came across an article that said, do you know a guy, when I say the name Scott Forstall, do you know who I mean?
Yep.
Guy used to work at Apple for many years with Next, with Steve Jobs for, you know, way back in the early 90s, I believe, and things. I came across a story in an interview he recently gave that he interviewed at Microsoft many years ago. And he ultimately ended up rejecting the job offer and he received a dead fish in the mail from Microsoft and thought it was some sort of strange mafia threat that he'd turned them down. As it turns out, the recruiter or whoever it was had sent him one of Seattle's finest, you know, the large salmon that you see down at the fish markets? It's yes. Kind of like a, hey, this is a bit of, you know, here's a gift from Seattle. Here's what, you know, a little bit about the area and all that sort of stuff. And he took it as a, you declined my job. I'm going to kill you. That's
sleep with the fishes.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Which I thought it was an absolute hilarious story.
Ah, misunderstanding. My bad.
Yeah, we just thought you were sending, we were sending you a nice fish, but turns out you took it as a death threat. Sorry.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yep. How about that? Yeah. Anyway, AC, good week this week. Wayne has had to depart. He's got a whole bunch of people waiting for him in another meeting. Wayne, if you're listening to this, we appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for spending time with us. It was great to hear about the cloud adoption framework. And I've got a bunch of reading to go do now. So that's my day.
Absolutely. Same here. I wrapped something up this morning. So after I get my GitHub SSO issues figured out, then I will, I'm definitely going to start diving in. I'm going to poke through some of this. So this is, it's interesting. I'm really interested to dive in.
Actually, one final thought on that SSO thing. Now you mention it, I recently got an email that said, you have been removed from the Office Dev org in GitHub from Microsoft. And I was like, huh, I didn't even, well, A, I didn't even know that I was a member of it still, but I was added to that years ago when I worked at Microsoft. And I'm like, wow, I was still part of that. That's so strange.
So that's actually part of it.
Part of the cleanup.
I'm curious to see if someone did that to me too. I really hope not, because I should be in that org. But that's one of the things where if you're, for those of you who are have not experienced this, if you do work with Microsoft and you have a GitHub account, and they Microsoft uses GitHub for a ton of stuff. For example, like a lot of the content, Wayne mentioned the Microsoft Learning site, a lot of the content from that Learn site is all inside of a private GitHub repo. To be able to access that repo, you have to be part of the Microsoft organization. And so like for me, I'm a vendor with Microsoft. I had to associate not just my GitHub account and my, I guess, my personal or my work email. I had to also associate my Microsoft vendor email with that account and the whole like multi-factor auth and all that stuff. I think that's one of the reasons why it's affecting it. And I've noticed this morning that some people who were a member of that Office Dev org from way back, if you're a member of a Microsoft org, then you automatically, this is going to apply to you. So I know that they're running around, they're trying to clean out people who no longer need access to it, or at least remove access, and then we'll add you back if you need it, because it can cause a little bit of confusion with it. You say that, and I just, as we were wrapping up the show, I looked at my email real quick, and I see like five emails, and people are going, hey, how can you get into this? Because you're in this. I'm like, oh, okay, I got stuff to deal with.
Makes sense. I just am putting two and two together now, and that would make sense why I got removed from that org, because that was years ago. So
yeah, I think it's a security thing, cleanup stuff that they're doing that I'm not, they're locking things down to them. I shouldn't say locking. They're making things more secure in response to something that had happened. And it makes sense. And it's just, it's like anything else is security, right? So you just, when you start locking things up or you start removing things, I mean, it's going to affect some people and you just can't anticipate everything. So it's, you can go back and fix it. So
it's a bit painful for a while.
Yes, it is.
Cool. All right, AC. Thanks for another great week. We will catch you next week.
Yeah, dude. See you then.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. It helps people find out about our show and grow our audience, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play it on the show. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll get notices of each episode as well as the show notes sent to you directly each week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.